Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome to what the... Wait, no. How do we start? Hi, Maddie.
Hi, Nick.
Welcome to What the Fuck is Happening with Podcast.
It's not like we've almost done 100 episodes of this. I also drew a complete blank. I was like, I don't know how
we've
started.
Fully done 100 episodes.
Wow. We didn't even do a 100 episode special?
No, because we started it from scratch again.
Did we?
Yep. We're back at 1, 2, 3. This is episode 4.
Wow.
Of season 1.
That's crazy.
I'm referring to it as season 2023.
So fair.
So, like, this is 2023, episode 4.
Love that.
Okay.
Love it. Okay, cool.
Did I say welcome to What the Fuck is Happening the Podcast?
I don't know. Welcome to What the Fuck is Happening the Podcast.
This week, the elephant in the room.
Yes. Is.
Is. That Maddie has really smooth weenuses.
Thank you. Hmm. I appreciate that. I don't put any effort into maintaining them whatsoever, but I appreciate you noticing nonetheless.
They don't at all feel like elbows.
Yours is fine too.
Yeah, but you can like feel the crinkles in the skin. Yours are like, there's no crinkle, which is making me think maybe you're a clone. Maybe you're a Megan, you know?
I would be so lucky.
Would you? Would you?
Yes.
You would?
Yes.
Iconic.
It's giving Emma Stone and Andrew Garfield. You've seen that, right? That interview with them? I totally thought that's what you were just referencing. That's so funny. I'll send it to you.
I was being gross. I was saying, would you fuck a clone of yourself?
Oh.
Like, would you fuck a...
Well, there's an Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone interview where they're both very clearly high and... Emma Stone says to Andrew Garfield, would you? And she never finishes the question and he says yes. And then they both break down into extreme laughter. It's hilarious. Nice. Jamie Foxx is also there and he's like, what
is going on?
Yeah.
I always, with like press junkets mm-hmm. and like interviews and shit, I always am able to categorize them into the press junket for the Hunger Games Catching Fire. The way you just dribbled.
I didn't mean to. Yeah.
I'm always able to sort celebrity interviews into like Jennifer Lawrence, Josh Hutcherson, or Liam Hemsworth.
Right.
And do you know why? It's because, what do you call like a trinary? Like a three, a binary, but it's three. Let's just say it's a trinary and pretend that's a thing.
Okay.
So it's a trinary. And there's the three... archetypes, which are the Josh Hutcherson, the Jennifer Lawrence, and the Liam Hemsworth.
Right.
And they correlate perfectly and one-to-one to SpongeBob, Patrick, and Squidward.
Okay. All right. Wait, can I guess?
Sure.
Who's who? I didn't see any Hunger Games Catching Fire press junkets, so I might be completely wrong here, but I think that Liam Hemsworth is Squidward.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jennifer Lawrence is SpongeBob and Josh Hutcherson is Patrick. Was I correct?
Yeah.
Yay! Obviously it works and it's replicable. So.
It's very replicable. And what you just said, we clearly had Emma Stone being SpongeBob, Andrew Garfield being Patrick, and Jamie Foxx being Squidward.
So true. So true. Wow.
I think it's... Does it help anything? Does it add any... Does it have any real world relevance? No.
This is what we call a cold open to the podcast. Completely.
Maybe that's like my special talent. They're like, hey, ooh, I can cartwheel with my eyes closed. And I'm like, I can
come up with a random
compare
subject.
Interview junkets for movies.
Fair.
To the SpongeBob cast.
As one should, to be honest. The SpongeBob cast is iconic.
Go off.
I love SpongeBob. The show, not necessarily the character. I do love the character, though. Anyway, moving on. So, the elephant in the room this week. Wait, did we just do that?
I don't know.
Smooth-weeness, yes.
Smooth-weeness.
Okay, I don't know how we got from that.
I think we just jump into a few topics that we want to talk about.
Yes.
Poppy culture moments this week.
Yes. And then our main topic, should we...
Should we come up with a word? Pocomo? Pop culture moments?
Yes, we should. I totally think we should.
Pocomo woe?
What is the woe?
Pocomo we. Pocomo we.
What is
pop culture moments of the week. Pocomo woe.
Okay.
I like it. Pocomo woe?
One.
Is that Taylor Swift?
Oh, Taylor Swift.
It's fucking wild.
Wild. There are so many... Wait. Because there's two different things to talk about with Taylor Swift this week, which is A, her releasing some songs, and B, the Eras Tour starting.
Right. Well, we don't need to talk about the songs, because all we have to say about that is that they... Oh, you want to talk about the fact
backdated, that they're backdated. Because I think it's so unhinged. Why would she not release them as an EP?
I agree, but there's nothing to actually say about it.
Aside from what was she thinking? Oh, okay. So she released four songs, all from different, well, three different eras of albums.
Sure.
And instead of releasing them as a single EP, what she's done is release them two albums retrospectively. So
right, yeah.
A song has been added to the Lover album. One song has been added to the album. They've been added kind of as singles, but they're using the same artwork and stuff.
Yeah. Yes, but if you go into the album on Apple Music or Spotify, the new songs aren't there.
Okay.
It's more if you think of it as a timeline.
Yes.
And you don't have to think of it as because that's what it literally is.
It literally is.
If you go into the albums and stuff on Apple Music or Spotify or whatever, they are obviously ordered in most recent to oldest.
Yes.
For some reason, with I don't even know.
Dates attached to them, years attached to them, saying this album came out in 2023, this album came out in 2021, whatever.
Yeah, it was the release date.
This is important context for this.
She released these four songs.
Yeah.
And
she said, you know what I'm going
to
do?
She just kind of assigned them to piggyback on the albums that she has previously released. So she used the same artwork, the same album name,
title,
and everything. And timeline-wise, they are in place of the singles for that album.
Yeah.
Released before the album. Even though that's not true and they never happened like that.
Yeah. So, for example, the song that is released for the Lover album says it came out in 2019. It's like, it didn't. It came out in 2023.
It leaked in 2019.
I mean, fair. But like,
no,
I don't know. I just think that's so unhinged. Like, we are just living in a lawless land.
I mean,
you can just say something came out whenever you want to say it came out.
I think it feels especially weird with Love is probably the one that makes the most sense because the other three are kind of higgledy, poggledy, boogly, boobity.
They are.
You know, the...
Well, that's why they should have just been released as an EP.
What's the song, If This Were a Movie? No.
Yeah, something, If I Were a Movie, or If We Were a Movie, or something like that.
Yeah, that was originally released on Speak Now.
Yeah, as part of the Speak Now album. Yeah.
I think that's not true. It was part of the deluxe.
Interesting. Okay.
So the original album released... And the original album was entirely self-written.
Yes.
She was the only songwriting credit or lyricist on the album.
Right.
Then she released the deluxe edition with six or eight extra songs or whatever. This song was on that.
Yes.
And it was the only song on the deluxe album that wasn't written exclusively by her.
Right.
So people have assumed that...
Mm.
When they she just released this and she backdated it to be released with Fearless, Taylor's version.
Yeah, yeah.
Meaning 2021. She's kind of,
yeah, something like that. But she's added it to
Fearless. It's been backdated to... No.
She...
It's been, it's been backdated to 2021.
Yeah, yeah. But it has the Fearless album cover, and it says it's a Fearless single. Single.
Yeah.
Which means it's she's basically reassigned it from the Speak Now album to the Fearless album, which is also unhinged.
Which people are confused about, but also people are justifying as when she re-releases Speak Now as Taylor's version, she wants it to be able to say that it's entirely self-written.
I mean, again, it's like it all, I totally understand that there are probably reasons for all of what she's just done,
but it's
unhinged. But there are rules.
It's unhinged because it's been released backdated to 2021 as part of Fearless Taylor's version.
Yeah,
technically speaking, you would backdate it if you're backdating it at all
Speak Now,
would you backdate it too?
Yeah. Anyway,
2009,
or just release it with Speak Now, you know,
separately.
Yeah, exactly. Like, why did it come out now at all? I mean, obviously, I know we know why. We assume we know why it came out, which is so that she can have the writing credits to herself for Speak Now. Anyway, all very weird. And the other unhinged thing she did this week.
The two other songs, the most important songs that she released, are Safe and Sound and Eyes Open from the Hunger Games soundtrack. Now, I didn't think she would ever re-record these because I thought there would be some kind of legal... crossover with perhaps
Universal or whoever it is,
Lionsgate having the rights to the songs or whatever, but I guess not, she re-recorded them. And the original songs, the Hunger Games soundtrack was released in March of 2012.
Okay.
Red came out October 2012.
Interesting.
These songs obviously not part of Red. In fact, people actually, she released these two songs as part of the Hunger Games soundtrack. Yeah. And back in 2012, people were like, oh, so her next album's going to be kind of low-key.
Yeah.
Like, soft, rocky kind of vibes. No, this was very much just for the Hunger Games.
Yeah.
But, so she's backdated these and made them part of Red Taylor's version.
Again, fuck, just make them EPs. It just doesn't make
sense. Well, I think these two specifically don't make sense because...
they don't belong on an album. They're standalones.
But not even that. I just think that, like, sonically and musically, they don't fit. If you listen to all of Red Taylor's version, including the vault tracks, and then you got to the end and it automatically played Safe and Sound at Eyes Open, you'd be like,
what the fuck?
What was she on when she wrote these two compared to when she wrote the rest?
Yeah, that's really fair.
They're drastically different to anything on Red.
It's really, really fair.
But again, Eyes Open is one of her best songs.
I think, honestly, it must be because she didn't want to interrupt the Midnights era with these weird standalone-ish kind of songs. But why would she release them now at all?
Yeah.
Just wait. Like, what was the impetus behind this?
I reckon she should have still released them now. I just think she should have, like we said earlier, put them in a 4-song EP.
Yeah.
Call it the era's... singles or the era's standalones or something.
Yeah, so true.
And just use the poster from the era's tour as the album cover.
Yeah. Weird. It's really weird. Anyway.
It was a choice.
Moving on then to the era's tour, because this is the other unhinged thing Taylor did this
genuinely
week.
Still trying to process.
Yeah.
This, so last night for us.
For us.
Yesterday for America, whatever. Taylor performed the first date of the
era's tour.
Era's 52-date tour.
Yes. If you haven't seen anything about this, let us blow your minds.
Yes. One, the visuals, the spectacle, insane. Phenomenal. There's a moment
as
where
always.
The stage floor even has screens.
It's a screen, yeah.
She dives into the stage being projected to look like water.
Yeah.
And then they have a projection version of her swimming along the catwalk all the way to the other side, other stage. There's two stages on both sides. Swimming all the way to the other side, and then she pops out at the other end in a new outfit change and everything, obviously. But, like, it's just, like, the most insane stuff. So visually and everything, super impressive, super insane.
It's so insane.
I don't think anyone predicted the fact that she would make the concert 3 hours and 15 minutes long.
I don't understand it.
Give us some context for how long a normal concert is.
1.5 hours.
Max. I've been to probably 10 concerts in my life.
Yeah.
In my adult life, I should say. none of them have gone for more than an hour 45.
Yeah, no, definitely not. Definitely not. For a lot of reasons, mostly of which is the sheer stamina that is required for that.
It is insane.
It is insane. So she did three hours.
The physical and mental toll.
Oh, for sure.
Previously has been too much for any other musician.
Yeah.
The problem is that they're all mortals.
And Taylor Swift is a goddess.
A deity. She is not human anymore. She has transcended.
She really has. I haven't fact checked this, so I don't know how true it is, but I have seen people saying online that, yes, even though she's performing back to back in specific cities, when she moves city, there is a week between each, like, city, basically. Yeah. Probably half because of the amount of stage that needs to be bumped in and bumped out, because it's fucking insane how big this stage is. It's even bigger than the Reputation stage, and I thought that was massive.
It's also very cinematic, so the entire thing screens.
Yeah.
But, like, insanely huge.
Insanely huge. So she did 3 hours and 15 minutes. She performed 44, maybe 45 songs if you count the intro of Miss Americana and Cruel Summer mashup. Like, if you count Miss Americana as its own thing, 45 songs. And she did 16 outfit changes. What the fuck?
She played, I think, between 4 and 8 songs for each album.
She did. She only did one for Debut and for Speak Now, which is interesting. But the rest of them, she did multiple.
People are speculating that for Speak Now, once she releases the Taylor's version, it'll be
Do more.
But then I'm like, but then why does it in 1989 have
and Reputation
6 songs? You know?
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. It doesn't make any sense.
I think it's fucking cool that she is giving the fans this much.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Not just, like, for their money, but, like, I think it's cool that for people who haven't seen a lot of the songs perform.
Yeah, well, when she said Eras Tour, she fucking meant it.
She meant it.
She meant it.
Yeah. But the reason we're so gagged by this is just purely because of the length of 3 hours.
Oh, yeah, minutes. For sure.
It's, like, deeply wild.
It is deeply wild. It is, and I don't think... Like, it's hard to grasp how deeply wild it is if you haven't been to other concerts before, like, and seen that they only perform for an hour and a half. And it's like, you can see at the end of it that an artist is exhausted.
Yeah.
I just don't understand how she can be. And so many of the videos that I saw of her the spotlight was on her. There weren't a lot of backup dancers. There were, but not consistently. So there were a lot of the time she was alone on stage. And it's like... The sole focus is on her for those 3 fucking hours, you know? Like, I just can't get my head around it.
Yeah. I agree. And I think the fact that, I'm sorry, that, like, vocally, that has to
be
intense.
It really must be intense. I'm convinced that she must have more, she must be doing more lip syncing this time than she usually does, which, like, fucking fair. Completely understandable.
Not even lip syncing, but, like, backing vocals, you mean?
Oh, yeah. Well, probably both. Probably both. Usually what artists do is sometimes they will lip sync a whole song, but typically what they actually do is that it's like almost they switch out line by line. So they'll lip sync, so they'll sing maybe like the one line of the chorus. And then if there's like oohs and ahs, that will be backing vocals, but they'll make it seem like they're singing it when they're not.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. So it's not typically like they just sing,
pretend
to sing a whole song. They can. Pink did it in her Funhouse tour. She did a couple of songs that were just like full lip syncs. Mm. But like, it's not typically what kind of happens. But who fucking knows what she's doing for this, because it's 3 hours and 45 songs.
It's pretty wild.
Who knows? It's unprecedented.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Anyway, moving
Interesting.
On. Interesting. Moving on to the next topic. You said you had topics.
I do. I'm just processing. It's a lot.
It is so much. I don't understand it. I don't understand it. I don't understand how she's going to take the show international. She's doing 50 shows for the US. Like, how is she going to do... Oh, God, I don't understand.
I mean, the second night of the Glendale Eras tour... probably ended a couple of hours ago. We haven't checked, but
that's true.
Maybe she cut it down. Maybe it's only 2 hours for the rest of us, you know?
Very possible.
Maybe that's also, just because it was the opening show.
I mean, I kind of, I mean, that would be a bit of a dick move to, like, set up expectations and then not follow through. But also, I would completely understand because that's a big commitment.
Oh, she's also doing an acoustic version of a song every night.
Yeah, surprise song.
She's not planning on repeating any songs.
How interesting.
So she's planning on having 52 songs not in the set list.
Yeah, interesting.
That she's going to do acoustic versions of.
Very interesting. Well, apparently 45 songs is only 20% of her entire discography, so I totally believe that. Mm. Totally believe that. She also did the 10-minute version of All Too Well.
Which is iconic.
So iconic. So iconic.
I'm probably most excited for that. I'm Same. Like, actually, no. Cruel Summer number Cruel one. Cruel
Summer, yeah. Yeah.
Anyway. Sorry for being a nerdy. Yeah, I have a bone to pick with you.
Oh, no. What about?
You went to Sydney.
I did.
That's not my issue.
Just skipping along from that.
My issue is that you went to a play.
I did.
And you didn't tell me about it.
Oh, there's not really much to say. I don't want to slander anybody live on the podcast, but it was average. Ooh. I know.
Okay,
well,
don't tell us the name of the play.
I won't. Or of any of the characters.
Tell us why it was average.
I mean, overall, it was fine. It was just the main character. The actor did not do a particularly good job, and it kind of ruined the whole thing. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Is that the first play you've been to?
No, it's definitely not. But we went and saw it at the Opera House.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, which was really
cool.
So
I was what it is.
Yeah, they probably do. They might not. They don't know when I went to Sydney. Who knows? There are a lot of plays constantly being back and forth at Sydney anyway.
Sure.
So I was expecting something like kind of more bigger. I was expecting
Playwrights, you clearly have a way with words. More bigger.
I was expecting something more bigger than what we got.
It's giving more bigly.
I don't know what that is, but okay.
I'm pretty sure that's something Trump said in an official speech.
Jesus.
Anyway. Stop.
I've seen shows at Lismore that were better than that. So that's all I'll say.
Go off. Yeah. Do you have anything to say about Ed Sheeran naming his new album Subtract?
Yeah, why?
I mean, I think you told me why.
Well,
but I'm like, do something new with the titles.
Do something new.
It's just so predictable.
It really is. I think it's kind of a bit like you didn't put any effort in to naming your albums. So for the context of me, what I told Nick is that Ed Sheeran basically said that he has been writing this album called Subtract for more than 10 years. And he'd finished what he thought was the album. And then last year, or maybe 2021, his wife was pregnant and she got diagnosed with cancer, but they couldn't operate because she was pregnant. And also his best friend died. So that all happened within the space of a month. And then he said that, again, within about the space of a month, he rewrote the entire album Subtract because his whole worldview changed so drastically from what happened. And so that's the album that we're getting now.
Interesting.
I'm not really sure that means he needs to name it Subtract, though. Yeah. Yeah. I think that actually means, because it's not the album that he thought it was, he's free from the conventions of his own binding and can name it something else.
T.
And that's that.
And that's that. Yeah, I don't know. It's the same with Adele with Dirty,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like,
we're not picking on Ed Sheeran specifically.
No, I think it makes sense if you do it as like a trilogy. Three albums, that makes sense. It's a long story. Once you go past three, it's kind of like, oh, now you're just being lazy.
Yeah. Agreed.
So, and that does go for both Ed Sheeran and Adele.
Yeah.
Do something better.
Very that. Did you see that Demi Lovato?
No, I didn't.
Work. Demi Lovato, it's just been announced, is directing a documentary about child stardom.
Interesting. Good on them.
Right? I'm very excited for this, and I hope that Demi's able to kind of not just tell their own story.
Yeah.
But even
delve a bit deeper into it. Get some friends.
That's what I was gonna say is get some friends in, get people from the shows and all that stuff. Like, because I didn't watch Selena Gomez's documentary.
I didn't either.
But I'm pretty sure she touches on stuff like that, because she's been...
Yeah.
Like, she was in, like, the Mickey Mouse Club or whatever, wasn't she?
Barney, I think it was.
Barney?
Yeah. Barney.
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 Anyway, yeah. Interesting. That would be really, really... That could be cool. That could be really cool, because I think she was in an era of Disney that most of us are familiar with. And it means that she can draw upon a lot of people who all of us would be like, well, this is someone who I know of, and it would be really interesting to see their take on it. Mm-hmm. And so many of them have had different paths. So if you think of like what's happened to Selena versus what's happened to Miley versus what happened to the Jonas Brothers versus what happened to like Sterling Knight, for example, like I think there are a lot of really interesting and different perspectives that could kind of come from that.
Well, I don't know if you've seen...
Maybe our expectations are too high already.
I don't know if you've seen like the TikTok previews from the Wizards of Waverly Place podcast thing. So
I did see this was a thing.
I can't remember their actors' names is, but Harper and the dad have a podcast where they like recap the show or whatever, and they had Selena Gomez on a recent episode. Yes,
they did.
And they sort of touched on the fact that she went on to superstardom.
Yeah.
And they kind of all... It sounds mean, but faded back into...
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Obscurity. You know?
Interesting.
And she being Selena, like, apologized to them and talked to them about the fact that she kind of abandoned them all.
Yeah. And didn't
stick, like, close to them and shit. I don't know. It was interesting. But I'm like...
Well, I mean, not that I know basically any details about that situation, aside from the fact that the person who plays Harper, she hasn't even continued on with an act. No, she's an ER nurse.
Yeah.
So she's, like, gone for a completely different career. She's not even trying to be an actor anymore. Whether that was by choice or by circumstance, again, I don't know enough detail to be able to speculate on. But, yeah, interesting. Yeah.
I don't know. I think I just brought that up because... Clearly other child actors have things to say.
Oh, yeah.
Is what I was getting at. Yeah,
fair.
So I think that Demi...
Right.
I think it's going to be a big task to undertake.
Yeah.
And I think especially for someone with well-documented mental health issues, I hope that she has a support system in place to kind of... She goes by she, they, doesn't she? They?
Doesn't she, they? Them.
Oh, okay.
I think.
Well, Demi... I hope has a support system who is on the journey.
Yes.
And is there for every step of the way.
So fair. Very reasonable.
Does that make sense?
It does make a lot of sense.
Because it sounds intense.
It does sound intense.
It's almost like making a documentary about your own trauma.
That's literally what it is. For sure. And but I think, like, when you're a celebrity, people aren't necessarily very receptive to their trauma. I think they kind of go, oh, no, bad things happen to you. You're rich.
Yeah. I think we've changed as a society.
I would hope that that's true. It's not what I've seen, but I hope that that's true.
I mean, now we encourage celebrities and stuff to talk out, like with Paris Hilton and...
People were very, very accepting of Paris Hilton.
I feel like we kind of... recently? I mean, Britney, like...
Yeah, Britney, that was very true.
It feels very 2000s and early 2010s for us to be like, oh, boo-hoo, you've got problems, you're a celebrity.
Yeah, yeah.
And we still obviously do that to an extent, but, like, when it's actually serious, I feel like we give them...
Yeah.
The
benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Does that make sense?
It does make sense.
I don't know what I'm saying. And I hope
that that's true.
I don't know what I'm saying. This is going to anger you.
Oh, no.
It angered me.
Oh, no.
But James Cameron's Avatar 3,
oh,
tentatively titled The Seed Bearer, which...
That's so sexual, it's not even funny.
Right? I'm like, ma'am, go on to 1K porn site. I'm sure there'll be plenty of movies already titled The Seed Bearer. So true. Okay, ma'am.
So funny. Honestly, even straight porn, to be perfectly honest. Period. I don't think that's
did you oh my god, there was a Martin Freeman.
Yeah, it's gone.
What was it?
It was a hair stuck on your face. One of my hairs.
Oh, ew.
I know, I'm sorry, they get everywhere.
Ew. Okay, no, so a couple years ago there was a Martin Freeman's the guy from Sherlock, right?
Yes.
Yeah, there was a Martin Freeman show, like a half hour comedy, family comedy about, mm-hmm. like, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it was called Breeders.
Right.
Like, rabbits breed a lot, and it's reference to that and stuff.
No.
But a tweet went viral that was like, Breeders? Until someone didn't have a gay intern. Yeah. Until the studio did not have someone gay on the marketing team.
Yeah. And they were right.
I feel like they just... Every marketing team for movies and shows and stuff needs to have a young person on the team.
Yeah.
Who's not afraid.
Yes.
To be like, guys, actually, Urban Dictionary says this means this.
Yeah. It's really true. You know? Literally, as soon as you said Breeders, my first thing was like, oh, that's kinky.
Right?
Like, immediate first thought. Immediate. I genuinely have no idea what that show could be about other than sex.
So, yes. Anyway, this isn't what's going to anger you about Avatar 3 the Seed Bearer.
Oh, right, sorry.
The thing that's going to anger you about Avatar 3 the Seed Bearer.
Uh-huh.
Seed Bearer.
Just to interrupt really quick, sorry, we can cut this out.
Avatar 3 the Cocaine Bearer.
Are we going to record this and go do something, or are you going to go and just leave? Well, I need to tell Mum whether or not I'm having dinner with her or not.
There's a scream at 7.
Okay, we can attempt to do that.
We can. Maddie's texting, but I'm going to keep going.
Okay.
Actually, I'm going to clap. It's just come out that they're far enough along in Avatar 3, the Seed Bearer, the Cocoon Bearer, that they have, like, an idea of how long it's going to be and all this stuff. Wow. And James Cameron's like...
No. Is it going to be really long?
Well, it's going to be 3 hours again, but it sounds like James Cameron's basically, it's come out that he wants to do, I don't know how to say it. He's made, I don't really know how to say this. He has 9 hours worth of footage that is usable.
Right.
And once the film's been theatrically released...
No.
He wants to do a 9-hour...
Director's cut?
As a series. So he's like a TV cut
series.
9 episodes or 8 episodes of a TV show for Disney Plus that's going to be released 8 or 12 months after the movie's released in cinemas. I just think that's a dangerous precedent.
It really, really, really is. And I actually also think that it's really bad storytelling. I haven't seen either of these things, but I don't... If you have 9 hours of footage and you think all of them are integral, fucking either make it a TV show or get rid of hours and make it a movie.
Mm.
And that's that. You can't fucking have it both ways. It's not a best of both worlds, yes. Hannah Montana situation.
No, I agree. And this goes back to... I can't remember what we said it about, but if your script...
Yeah.
If your screenplay...
Yeah.
...has 9 hours worth of content in it, don't shoot it.
Don't shoot
and
it.
And be like, we'll cut it down.
Yeah, no.
One, that's not going to be good for the cut-down version. The cut-down version is going to feel like it's missing things.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that it's 3 hours and 15 minutes long.
You're not going to... Yeah, you can't get the full story because you fucking haven't got the full story.
Trim it as much as you can before fucking filming.
Yeah, absolutely.
And two, is there really a world in which 9 episodes of an Avatar show that are just an expanded version of the 3-hour cinema release is entertaining?
It's just such a fucking wank fest. It's like James Cameron is like, you know what? The people want 9 hours of my amazing movie. We fucking don't. We want one or the goddamn other.
We want a tight 90 minutes.
We want a tight 90 minutes. We do.
And
we
maybe a behind-the-scenes Disney Plus special that goes for 45 minutes, right?
Yeah, I don't want.
3 hours and 10 minutes is too long for this one.
It's too
9 hours is too long for the next one.
It's actually, no, it's insane. It's insane. Things have gotten so out of hand. I genuinely, and not just with him, like, if we think about the 4 hour version of the Zack Snyder cut of Justice League, I think it was. And even though, again, it was too long, it was basically unwatchable because of how long it was. Yeah. It did add so much more context and story to the original movie. And again, the point is, if you can't tell the story in 2 hours, rewrite the fucking story.
That's what I was referencing. Yeah. I can't remember what is we back when that released, we were like, this version is drastically better.
Yeah. But it's not,
is there any reality in which Snyder could have cut this down into even 2.5 hours?
Yeah.
And made a cohesive film that was well received?
Yeah.
I don't think so, personally.
Oh, yeah. No, for sure. For sure. You need to start again, right? Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I think it's really very much a reflection of how egotistical Hollywood directors and screenwriters are.
I mean, faulty, a lot of the time James Cameron is justified. You know, he does have...
There's a difference between a 3 hour Titanic film and a 9 hour. Not only has he put the money where
his mouth is, he's like got the highest grossing movies of all time, so clearly he's doing something right. But I think he also at least pushes the envelope quite a lot in his
mean his ego is justified?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes and no, because is he allowed to be proud of what he's done? Absolutely. Is he allowed to write a 9 hour movie? No, he's fucking not.
and expect to be able to cut it down to 3? No.
Well, and expect to be able to cut it down to 3, but also expect that people want to see that much footage twice.
It's true. And also, Avatar The Way of Water was holding on. The plot was like a thread.
Yeah. If you want to make a pretty movie, just make a fucking documentary instead. Yeah. That doesn't make any sense. All right. Anyway. Cutscene.
We are interrupting this broadcast.
We are. I don't know where we got up to. It was like 3 hours ago. I don't remember.
To let you know that the second half of the pod is a very exciting review of The Last of Us Season 1.
It is, yes.
Special guest for half of it.
Chelsea, woo! Oh my God, I wish we still had the cheering thing on the roadcaster.
Please enjoy that.
But anyway.
So we're letting you know that we've got a different review.
Yes.
Not what we originally planned, but I think it's fun and fresh and cute and fun. And
I all totally those agree. Things.
So please enjoy.
Yay!
Welcome to What the Fuck is Happening in the Podcast.
All right.
I'm Nick.
I'm Maddie.
I'm Chelsea.
Yay, Chelsea's back!
Guest. This week... Not this week. This isn't a normal episode. This is a review episode. Special
review episode, yes.
And for the special review episode, we are reviewing season 1 of...
The Last of Us. What did you say?
She said The Last of Us, but she didn't wait for me to say it together.
Oh. Sorry. You were taking so long.
It's called dramatic effect.
Okay, sorry. You start again. We are reviewing season 1.
It's too late. You've ruined the whole thing.
The
elephant in the room for this review episode is that I'm already mad at Maddie.
That's so true. He is. He's
because she didn't play the song I wanted in the car, and I said, Maddie, if you don't play the song I want in the car, then specifically Vanessa Amorosi, this is me. Then I'm going to be grumpy for the rest of the afternoon.
So everyone's aware that was more than an hour ago, and he is still holding on to that grudge. So
I gave you a warning. I said I'll be grumpy all afternoon.
Anyway, so review episode. We don't have long. I'm trying to look at the time. We don't have long, so let's get straight into it. Do we need an elephant in the room for a review episode? I can't remember.
You just did the elephant in the room.
The actual elephant in the room this week is that I need to pre-warn you both that I will be one of those annoying defends that even when he knows they made a wrong choice.
I mean, I don't really know if there were that many wrong choices.
I don't need any criticism, valid or not, okay?
That's what I'm saying. There is no criticism okay. to make.
I mean...
Just say okay.
Okay.
Or if you do, I don't care, but I will fight you.
That's fair.
And I will fully know in my heart that I am wrong. But I will keep fighting. It's like Maddie when someone tells her that John and Sansa are a bad ship.
We don't need to address that right now. Maybe even a weird ship.
When someone tries to tell Maddie that using fisting in a conversation isn't normal.
Yeah.
Oh my god, you people. You need to move on from me and let's go into The Last of Us.
Now I'm fisting her leg. That's what she thinks fisting is.
Oh my god! I don't have time to get into a literary debate.
She doesn't have any time for fisting today.
Okay, no, so if someone so was grabbing someone's butt, would you say they were fisting their butt?
I mean, I personally, the way I would describe it is that their hand has to go into a full fist. So this would count, but this doesn't.
For context for listeners, I think Maddie's actually crazy. I mean, she is. But actually crazy. She's talking about in, like, a spicy scene in a book or something.
Well, not necessarily.
When they, like, grab the hair to, like, yank on it to be sexy. Grab
a fistful of hair.
Yeah, a fistful of a shirt. Or a fistful of...
Yeah, but you don't use that. Fisting as a verb.
You wouldn't say, he fisted me shirt. He fisted my head.
I wouldn't say fisted because I don't write in past tense. So
he fists my head as I look at him in the eyes.
Just sounds very violent. It sounds like you're getting punched in the head.
It could. I guess it could.
Oh, I got fisted outside the club tonight.
Well, you don't say it in that sentence. Anyway, moving on. This has nothing to do with zombies, apocalypses, or Daddy Pestro Pascal.
Pestro, Pestro.
Pesto.
Slay the house down, Bruce Mama.
Pesto, pasta. Yeah.
Yes, so for additional context in reviewing the show...
You're right.
I have played the games, and yes. I'm like a hardcore fanboy. It's like my... is The Last of Us. They had both not played the game or anything.
No, I had absolutely no idea what I was in for.
Yeah. Am I correct in saying, Chelsea, you've seen bits of the game over the years?
Only more recently.
Interesting. I mean, so yes, The Last of Us is HBO's new show.
Yeah.
Why did you just bring that towards me?
Because your voice isn't being picked up as well as ours.
And I am the most important. The HBO's The Last of Us is a new... Wait, which way is the microphone actually recording?
It's omnidirectional, so from everywhere.
Oh, so you didn't change it?
No, yeah.
Okay. HBO's The Last of Us is a new show that premiered in January.
Yes.
Nine episodes long.
January. Wow.
January.
That was a long time ago.
Based on the 2013 PlayStation Naughty Dog video game.
Mm-hmm.
About a fungal zombie apocalypse.
Yes.
Bloody cordyceps,
but it's actually about like a father-daughter relate, like a
dynamic.
I'm trying to think of the right word, like an adoptive, like a faux, like found family kind of thing.
Yeah,
it's basically Pedro Pascal's character Joel is meant to be smuggling Ellie, mm-hmm. Bella Ramsey's character, across the country to this rebel group who think they can find a cure using the fact that
mm-hmm. yes.
Now, when I forced you to watch the show, why did you actually say yes to letting me force you? Like, why? You watch this show weekly for the first time since Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
She doesn't watch shows weekly.
No, I don't. I don't.
But this she did, and...
Well, honestly, it was mostly because you kept bullying me about watching it, and then Mum and Dad and I were trying to find something to watch, and I was like, oh, well, there's this show that Nicholas wanted me to watch. I guess we could give it a go. And so we did. And then after that, it's like, well, I can't not watch it weekly because I'll get spoiled. So.
Yeah.
Do you hear that, kids? Bullying works.
Peer pressure is important.
For yeah. building the foundations of friendship.
Exactly. And family.
Mm.
Yeah. Works. Anyway.
So, yeah, I was already in shock that Maddie was willing to watch a show weekly.
Yes.
Um,
I wouldn't say willing, but I did.
She watched it before I did every week.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Our fucking mum and dad loved it.
And she'd
it.
Message me the second it finished, and she'd be like, have you watched it?
What?
And I'm like, no, but you can't spoil it, so just tell me what you want to say, because you can't spoil it for me. I already played the game, like, 20 times.
That never happened.
So...
You never said I could talk to you about what would happen.
Yes, I did.
Okay, anyway.
Multiple
episodes. We don't need to have another argument. Chelsea's going to lose her mind.
Anyway, I don't know how you want to structure this review.
Well, let's see what Chelsea has to say, because we're probably going to have to pause in the middle so she can go. So let's start with Chelsea's opinion so that she can get them out.
Okay, so fuck that.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a lot of pressure.
Well, like, I was going to be like, just start. Are you?
I know.
No,
like, that's
well, I like remembered it. The way we normally review. Oh. The way we typically review things is that we each, up front, give it a 1 to 10 score. No decimals. No 7.5, because this is not...
Well,
if I wanted a 7.5 to be available for a reviewing standard, I would have made it between 0 and 100, and you could have said 75. But no, so no 0.5s. In this household.
I feel like it might be a 7.8.
Whole numbers only. So an 8.
No, I'd probably give it higher than that. I was just...
I...
Pulling your leg.
Give it 9 out of 10.
That's really high. Are you going to say 9 out of 10 too?
I would have said 9 out of... 8 or 9. Sorry, 8.5. But that's
20
fine.
20 seconds ago you said I'd give it an 8.8. A 7.8. Which was an 8.
Joking.
And I gave it a 9.
I
and you said that's too high?
Yeah. I feel like I would also give it between an 8 and a 9.
Well, it's pick one.
Yeah, I guess I'll give it
okay,
a 9.
Okay, what decimal
too.
Would you
fine.
Have given it?
8.5.
Yeah.
Well, then round up to a 9. That's how it works. That's how it works.
Oh, round down to an 8.
But you
but
don't
nine
round 5
too
up.
Low.
You don't round
yeah.
5 down.
Yeah, but 9's too high and 8's too low.
Yeah.
It's a 9 or an 8. Mm. If you're that conflicted, make it a fucking 8. I don't give a fuck.
No, oh, it's fine. It's a 9.
So really, it's more like an 8.7.
Anyway, so it's 9.
8 or 9.
No, pick one.
9, then.
So we gave it 3 9s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you flip that upside down, it's 666. Bottoms up, and the devil laughs.
I love that lady.
Honestly, cast the monster queen in season 2.
I totally agree. She would do some iconic marketing.
Mm.
Yeah, she would.
Would.
Anyway, now we typically give it a score and then justify that.
Yeah.
So, do we want to just word vomit, or do we want, like, Chelsea to kind of...
You start with the word vomiting. But if you have nothing,
we can go by story, we can go by acting, we can go by...
The
like, do you want to break it up into...
I mean, yeah, sure.
Bits and bobs?
Break it up into bits and bobs, I guess, because all of them...
So true. The acting, let's just start with that, because it's the one that is the easiest to talk about, because it was fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, that wasn't a bad actor.
There
wasn't
not a bad...
No.
Not even a bad scene, let alone a bad whole actor. It was actually incredible.
Hmm.
It was actually incredible, and absolutely, if those people, particularly Pedro and Bella, don't win Emmys for it, they would be robbed. It would be slanderous.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Are there any standout acting moments? Because I can think of one immediately.
I thought that it was just really cool that Ashley Johnson played. Yeah.
That was absolutely iconic.
If you want facts, I can lay out a fact for every scene.
No.
Anyway,
you don't.
No, an acting standout for me was in episode 6.
With the Monica chick? Is that the... Was that her real name?
Do you mean Melanie Linsky?
I do.
No.
Oh.
Melanie Linsky absolutely fucking killed it. And
yeah, she did.
She gave...
She was terrifying.
An incredible performance as someone who was unhinged.
She
and
really
also
did.
Was forced into the role of
yeah.
a leader when she's very clearly not a leader.
Yeah.
And I think people were missing... Men were complaining that she wasn't a strong leader. And it's like,
that's
the point, Yolanda!
Yeah, her brother was the leader,
yeah.
and she just had to...
Right, and
yeah.
she was stepping up because she was unhinged and wanted to
yeah.
revenge. So that's the fucking point, Yolanda.
Mm.
No, it's in episode 6 when Sam and Henry die.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Bella's,
like, little gasp, her little whimper.
That's what I was talking
yeah.
about.
Yeah.
The moment... That was in episode 6 when, I think Henry shoots Sam. Anyway,
I don't
either
know.
Way.
I think Sam's the little kid.
Sam gets shot because he's turned into a zombie, and Bella just lets out, like, this guttural...
Well, I think that was actually when Henry shot himself, wasn't it?
that she like.
Oh, it might have been. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because
it was that scene.
It was like, yeah.
At the time, she was being attacked.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
By
yeah.
Sam. So I don't think that that was when she let out like the one ball.
I said that scene.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway, I was it's just that moment is when she let out that guttural scream. Also, to clarify, Bella Ramsey uses
they them.
No, I think she uses she they.
She them.
She uses she or they.
Yeah,
so it's fine. I just wanted to clarify that because a lot of people do think it, she just goes they them.
Nicholas was like, no.
Well, it's that would still be misgendering, huh?
Yes.
Does that? Yeah. Anyway. She did phenomenally in that scene. I mean, she did... I actually almost feel like she even did better than Pedro, but I feel like I think...
Do you mean in that scene or...
No, in the overall. I feel like I think that because she actually, I felt like, ended up having more screen time than he did in the end.
I don't disagree, but I agree because I think she had an uphill battle.
Yeah, that's fair. That's really fair.
I think she got introduced halfway through the first episode.
Yeah.
She was the one with the mysterious background. We immediately had emotional stakes with Joel knowing his backstory. And not only that, there was, like, a lot of men online, like, toxic gross men who were convinced Bella Ramsey was miscast as Bella.
Yeah.
So I think also from that respect, behind the scenes and also character-wise, she had an uphill battle to prove kind of herself.
Yeah, yeah, I also feel like she gets put through more emotional turmoil over the series.
Every episode is just cue that montage of Jamie Lee. Do you not know what I'm talking about?
No.
Ugh, it's fucking iconic. It's like this 3-minute montage, and it's just every single press junket for the last Halloween movie.
Mm.
She would go, you know, it's really a story about trauma. And it's just that repeated at, like, every single possible press junket. It's so fucking funny. Every episode, they were traumatized. And so
my God. Absolutely, that's so true. I think from, like, episode 3 onwards, when we met Bill and Frank, it was just like,
trauma.
Oh my God.
Trauma.
Well,
it was.
Tess died the episode before that.
So true, but I felt like the Bill and Frank one was, like, when it really, like, solidified that the show was going to be
And that's why it was
emotional
such a good
and traumatic
episode to have early on in my opinion, because it did very much kind of establish the emotional stakes of the show.
It did. It really did.
If that makes sense.
No, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. And while the way Tess died was very, like, traumatizing, I wasn't particularly attached to her character.
No. No. Not yet.
I actually, when she popped up in episode 3... In the flashbacks, the Bill and Joel stuff.
Mm.
Bill and Joel. Bill and Frank stuff.
Billy Joel.
That was, like, almost more emotional than her actual death.
Yeah.
It gave us a bit more insight.
Like, yeah, and you got to see, like, the emotion.
Yeah. No, for sure. For sure. Anyway, so acting was fantastic. Story. Phenomenal.
Mm.
I feel like I totally, because Nick and, like, from what I'd kind of slightly seen online had said that it was like a zombie show, I was expecting so much more action, and it was really not that at all.
No, there really was not that many scenes with zombies in them.
No, there really
it
wasn't
like Walking Dead-esque where it's just
no.
Yeah, like, well, that's the thing. I think both Craig Mazin and Neil Druckmann are the showrunners, but Neil Druckmann directed both games.
Right.
And Craig Mazin obviously has... But anyway, they specifically said that the reason they kind of kept the violence, like, the action scenes to a minimum was so that the violence would still have an impact.
Yeah. That's fair. That's really fair.
Because in shows like The Walking Dead, like Chelsea just said, it's like hack and slash, willy-nilly.
Yeah.
You get desensitized to it.
Exactly. Really it's fast. Like, oh, that's a cool action. Like in John Wick, by the 18th action scene of the movie, you're like, yes, this is a very cool, slick action film. You're not thinking about
the actual
people,
story.
The families they're leaving behind, and the trauma.
No, for sure. For sure.
And they obviously had to work with a different medium, because in the games, the character, like, it's super violent, obviously, but, like, you shoot a character... And they beg for their lives. And they're like, please, I have a kid, I have children, like, all this stuff. And that's how they kind of get that same message across in the game. But obviously, you're not literally controlling people when you're watching TV, so they have to find a different way to balance it.
Yeah.
And I think...
Hmm.
I think they did it well, too. I mean, in general, the emotional beats they hit consistently and so intensely was really, really very impressive. Mm. Like, characters that we were only introduced to that episode who then died, I was, like, crying every time, being like, no, I'm so sad that this person's dead. Like, how can you make me love a character and then mourn their death in 40 minutes? Like, that's impressive writing.
Yeah.
It's very impressive writing.
Absolutely. Okay, question about, because I've seen... The main complaint I've seen online is that the action scenes cause some issues with pacing. I personally, especially watching it weekly, I didn't feel like there was pacing issues. But I also know the game and stuff, so I can't say it completely objectively. But did you guys find...
No, the only thing pacing-wise that I found a little weird was the last episode. I don't know what it was, but it just felt off pacing-wise.
Well, I think it almost didn't feel like a finale until, like, the last 10 minutes, which was... off-putting.
But even still, the fact that they, like, didn't leave it on any sort of cliffhanger to me was a bit of a shock to my system.
Yeah, interesting.
To be honest.
Very interesting.
Because I'm so used to season finales with, like, them knowing that they're going to have future seasons to leave it on some sort of,
interesting. Do you,
like,
not think that's a cliffhanger?
I didn't really.
It's interesting.
I guess it's based on the viewer's interpretation of whether or not Ellie knows Joel's lying.
Yeah.
I guess. But...
Because if you think of it that way, where she knows he's lying and the relationship's just changed forever kind of thing, that's kind of cliffhangery.
Yeah, I guess. In a non-traditional sense, then that is.
Yeah, yeah. It's more of an emotional cliffhanger than it is like an actual action cliffhanger. Mm. Well then, okay, I guess naturally we're kind of at the point where... What do we think of Joel's actions in the final episode? Because I have a really strong opinion about this, and I want to know yours first.
Interesting. Okay. Can I quickly
because it's
say
like a
the
big
two,
moral, yeah.
Like, trains of thought for it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Go for it.
Because...
Well, it's either that Joel
I mean,
was right
was,
or that
Joel
was
this has been literally, like, divisive since 2013.
Yeah, fair.
When the game came out. There's been articles since, like, nonstop. I think Neil Druckmann put it in a good way where he said... If you ask a parent, someone who has a child, if he did the right thing, they would say yes, he made the right choice.
Yeah.
But if you ask someone perhaps younger or who doesn't have a child, they might argue with that.
Yeah.
And I agree with that totally, but I also am like...
Okay, well, it's 5:15 almost, so Chelsea, do you want to quickly put your opinion on which way you fall and then we can pause...
Honestly, I'm on the fence about it.
Really?
Yeah. I think it's meant to be morally grey.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is meant to be.
Because it's like, ultimately, she is just one person, but I can completely understand why Joel reacted in that way.
Mm.
Like, it's kind of shit for the rest of the world to now not have, like, any sort of chance of a cure. But if it was someone that I cared about, I could... empathize with Joel's situation, and also the fact that they didn't tell Ellie at all.
Well,
they
just
knocked her out and
I mean, minor spoiler, but that's a major theme in the second game.
Yeah.
Is about the fact that both the doctors and Joel took her free will away, and she
wasn't
able to make that
choice.
She
wasn't able to make that
herself.
Choice for herself. Yeah.
So don't worry, they do explore that more.
Yeah.
Because I do think that's the most interesting part of it.
Yeah.
Is Joel knew full well she probably would have agreed.
Yeah, and because that's, like, what Marlene says as well to him.
Yeah.
Is, like, it's what she would have wanted. And it's like, yeah, but you don't
know
that because you didn't actually ask her.
And on top of that, she's actually 14 and has just very recently killed people that she loves. Like, as if she's not immediately going to be like, yeah, sure, kill me. I don't want to live this life anyway. I might as well have some kind of purpose. Like, I'm not even sure... whether she actually, as a 14-year-old who is traumatized, actually should even get the choice?
Do you think that that's also why Joel said what he said and did what he did? Because he knew full well that she spent the first third of the episode being hardcore depresso.
Mm. Yeah.
And being really, really depressed and, like, not kind of feeling like there was purpose and stuff. And after the David stuff, she was, yes, again, very, very emo. Do you not think that maybe he was like, well, even if they did give her the choice, she still would have said yes now, but she only would have said yes because she's so depressed.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if that necessarily played into his decision-making, but it absolutely is one of the reasons why I'm like, Joel was completely correct. He absolutely did the right thing.
Yeah. And I mean, she if it was, not. Like, current situation and he was her parent or guardian, then he would have, like, medical rights over.
Yeah.
But it's just...
Now, do you
think the other thing, though, is that if you put it into a wider context of being like, okay, that dude doesn't know what he's doing, the doctor guy, doesn't know what he's doing.
He did.
I mean, he doesn't know what he's doing in terms of manufacturing cure from Ellie.
Like, they have a vague idea of...
They're just hoping. It's a fungal infection, which means there isn't a vaccine anyway. We've never in the history of humanity been able to create a vaccine for a fungal infection. That's what they wanted to do. It wasn't a cure. It was a vaccine, right?
Far as I can tell, from things that I've seen online, what they... Ellie's cordyceps in the hopes that they would take over and then all of...
I got vaccine.
I mean, like, it could be that they had said a vaccine, but
it could totally be both.
That's way fucking smarter than a vaccine.
But because you can't develop a vaccine for a fungal.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we say vaccine, then, but it's like we're just being something
immunity.
Preventative.
A cure.
And then on top of that, they just have never had an immune person before, and they're just, like, not even going to bother with anything else. They're just going straight to, let's cut out their brain.
Yeah.
Like, maybe we could take a couple of days to think about that, do other tests on her blood or whatever, instead of going straight to, let's chop her head out.
Do you reckon maybe, like, they did that back in Boston?
With who?
Well, they had Ellie for a couple of weeks.
I mean, I guess they could have.
Because when they first see the bite, Ellie's bite, it's been weeks. And she hasn't turned.
Yeah, and that's why they keep doing those tests with her. But as far as I could tell,
they
just
say that explicitly
did the test from a distance and didn't take any blood just in case she turned. But that was just my own.
Well, I didn't think that they'd done any testing on her because they didn't have any doctors.
So despite the fact that Marlene said definitively, this will give us a cure...
I think she's a liar.
You think she's a liar?
She's a liar.
Well,
I don't know. I don't know how she could say it that definitively.
The thing with it as well... is that, like, it wouldn't stop any of the people that are already infected. It would just stop more people infected. So it's not like a cure. It's just like...
How are they even going to distribute it? If it's a cure or a vaccine and not what you were saying about the taking over the cordyceps, whether it's a cure or a vaccine, how are they even going to distribute it anyway? I think they're idiots. I think it's stupid. And I'm 100% on Joel's side. If Ellie wants to make the decision in 5 or whatever years' time, after they've run tests and have decided the only way we can go any further with this is to go into your brain, and she goes, I'm okay with that. I'm ready to die for it.
What about the fact that Joel killed all the fireflies and now there's no fireflies left?
I don't really care about that.
But I mean, that's what I'm saying, is she can't make that decision in 5 years.
That's really true. I mean, he has...
That was it. That was their only chance.
Yeah, he did
they
definitely...
They killed the only surgeon who had experience in this stuff.
Yeah. But I mean, do you think that someone else could do it?
No. Well, I think that's the point, is that...
Like, we never
kind
really
of,
got...
They got the lucky draw of both having someone immune and having someone in the Fireflies who was capable of doing that.
But...
I wouldn't say that it's impossible, but I would say that it's highly, highly, highly unlikely they'll find another person.
But not even specifically the Fireflies, though. Like, it would then maybe not be someone in Fedra who could do it? I don't really know. We didn't really
get just out in the world. Yeah, like in Jackson or something, potentially. Yeah. But the chances of those two things converging again?
Yeah. Or them and especially people in the medical field would have suffered.
Also, Ellie would have to be looking for this person alone. The Fireflies don't exist.
Also, though, I don't know if this is true or not, but isn't the dude who was a surgeon, and this maybe is influencing my thinking, but isn't he not
is
actually
a... Is this
a
spoiler for her?
It could be.
Well, it's fine.
Skip forward 15 seconds. I might be spoiling something. What?
Oh, I don't know if I am. Fine, I won't say it.
Okay, we are continuing to record without Chelsea. Back to two.
Yes, back to us. Chelsea had to go. Sad.
In the words of Agatha Christie. And then there was... Have you seen that?
It didn't really roll off the tongue very well.
Look, that's on Agatha Christie. Have you seen or read or watched the Agatha Christie and then there was not one? And then there was
no, I haven't. I actually haven't read or watched much Agatha Christie at all, to be honest.
I went through a kick during the pandemic where I watched every Agatha Christie adaptation there was.
Right.
And the BBC's, like, 3-episode miniseries of And Then There Were None.
Mm. chef's kiss.
Fucking phenomenal.
That's just a little extra review in there.
That's a little extra review in our The Last of Us review.
So, to circle back around to The Last of Us.
God, what happened to being able to tangent?
We didn't come up with a conclusion on the main moral question of the show, which is, did Joel do the right thing?
I mean, there is an answer, and the answer is he probably should have let them save humanity. But I don't know if that
is the answer.
Well, that's kind of my thing, is they're both right. Like,
I mean,
they're both wrong.
I think the issue, I actually think it is that they're both wrong. And I think the issue is that if you just take it at face value and go, should Joel have let them come up with a cure? Absolutely, yes, he should have. It was very selfish of him to not let them. But when you look at it as a wider picture and all the questions start to come up of, well, could they even have done it? How would they distribute it? Mm. Ellie was severely depressed. Is she even, choice would she have made? And is she in her right mind enough to make it? Like, when you start to think about all of those outside factors, you definitely start to go, well, this is not black and white. This is very gray, which is almost what makes it such a compelling question and such a compelling series, right?
It's like a very everything in the series and every like moral question I think can be kind of peeled back to very simple questions.
Oh, absolutely. But they're not.
But I think that's what makes it good and worth it, is that, yeah, exactly. Like the central question for the entire overall narrative of both games, and I mean, you see it in the first season of the show as well. The kind of, I guess, conundrum that love and too much love can be the most powerful thing.
Mm.
But remembering powerful is neutral. Powerful doesn't mean good or bad.
Yeah. So yes.
It can mean with Joel finding his will to live. But it can also mean Joel killing the Fireflies and like losing any chance of humanity.
Yeah.
And that's literally all because of his love, you know?
Yeah, yes.
So actually that's something that I would say. If going forward, just keep that theme of love being powerful, whether it's good or bad, keep that in mind, because I think it contextualizes a lot of stuff, even in the first season of the show.
Yeah, for sure.
Like Bill and Frank, again, the emotional stakes that they kind of brought in.
It's exactly what it's not. It's not just about Joel and Ellie and about their love. It's actually about every single person that we meet along the way. As you say, it's about Bill and Frank. It's about Sam and Henry. It's about
even Monica Kathleen.
Lewinsky and
not Monica Lewinsky.
Kathleen and her brother. Yeah. And even, I mean, not necessarily David, but
his love for being a creep.
So true. But definitely, like, within his, their town, like, the first thing we see is that they're mourning the dude that Joel killed in the last episode.
Yeah.
So, like, again,
well, every single action in this game, in this narrative has consequences.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's another beautiful thing about the show, is that those, back to the talking about the violence needing to be meaningful, it also means that every piece of violence, there's typically a consequence for their actions.
Well, I also think what it did was it actually made what Joel did in the hospital, i.e. killing those Fireflies, even the ones who surrendered to him, actually seem horrific, was because we hadn't really seen that level of brutality. And like, we'd seen it with one-on-one, but we hadn't seen it on such a large scale until we got to him.
Yeah.
Until we got to that scene. And I think that is what makes, Mum said to me the day after, she was like, I'm really disappointed in Joel. I was like, Mum, you would have done that if it was me. And she said, well, yeah, obviously, but I'm still disappointed in him. And I think that's entirely because of how violent it was. Yeah. And particularly when he killed that guy who'd surrendered, Mum was like, oh, Joel. I was like, I get it. I'm also with him.
Again, though, Pedro's performance of that.
Oh, my God.
Of him going, like, stone cold.
Oh.
Iconic.
It was so iconic. With that music, like, because it almost, like, everything, like, there was no sound other really than the music that was kind of happening.
That's the other, the soundtrack, the score.
Oh, yeah. Very impressive.
Is any of the strings stuff is done by the same guy who scored the games.
Love that.
So I think his name is Gustavo Santanella, and he's phenomenal. He's known for those kind of haunting, I think, strings. Like,
yeah, yeah.
It's literally him alone. He has plugs. He has audio recording
yeah.
outlets in every room of his house, including the bathroom.
Whack.
Because if he thinks of a melody or, I don't know, fucking musical things, if he thinks of something or he realizes this scene feels like this and I can portray that feeling by doing this thing, he can literally just do it there.
Iconic.
I know, it's pretty iconic.
That is a level of dedication that I will never have.
Yeah. Yeah. What are the other aspects that we should probably touch on? I think the direction was solid.
I mean, I guess really, I don't know if we necessarily need to talk about how good of an adaptation it was from the video game, because I feel like that's been discussed at length. That's the main thing that I see, is people say, I'm so impressed with how good of an adaptation it was, how mm-hmm. closely it stuck to the source material, mm-hmm. but also changed and adapted it enough to really add to the story instead of yeah. taking away from it. But I think the main thing there, which again, I know has been touched on a lot, is I kind of really want to get your take on like the emotional beats of the game versus the TV show, because I think when you're the one who's actually playing the game,
I don't know,
because it's so focused on Joel's point of view and on Ellie's that totally. I think a lot of stuff you don't see.
I think there's a lot that the game does do better purely because you're in it.
Yeah.
The immersion is very different to yes. the immersion of television. But I also think that the game adapted everything really well. The TV adapted all of the emotional beats really well. Most of the, like, intense emotional scenes were lifted word for word from the game.
Yeah.
So I do think they held very much the same weight.
Which I think is really interesting, because I've seen a lot of discourse in the past of people being like, oh, well, book to movie or book to TV show, oh, they didn't do a very good job. Like, they didn't hit the same things that I wanted to. I really wanted to see this scene and how it played out on TV. And then other people are like, well, what did you want to do? Did you want them to lift it straight from the book and put it into the show? Yeah. Like, that would be really boring to see it rehashed. But I actually think that it, I mean, I didn't play the game, but I saw a lot of, like, comparisons. Yeah. I think it did add to it. I don't think it was just rehashing.
Any scene, like main scenes they cut.
Yeah.
It was almost all gameplay stuff.
Right.
So there's two action sequences in the game that people are, I don't want to say upset about, because I think everyone's just grateful to have a good adaptation of
the
most awarded game in history.
Yeah.
Second most awarded game in history.
Is the second one?
The most awarded game in history is The Last of Us Part 2. The second most awarded game in history is The Last of Us Part 1.
How interesting.
Yeah. There's the two big scenes from the big moments from the game that weren't in the show are just two action sequences.
Right.
So one of them is after Henry and Sam,
mm-hmm.
but before, yeah, no, it is. Okay. I think it is. After Henry and Sam, there's a hotel sequence where essentially they get separated in a clicker-infected hotel. Joel falls down a shaft, an elevator shaft thing. It's a really, really memorable moment in the game, because it's the first time you kind of get overwhelmed by the infected. So you're in this basement. It's known as the generator scene, and it's, like, infamous for being one of the most, like, on-the-edge-of-your-seat intense gaming moments ever. It's, like, he's in the basement of the hotel, it's flooded.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we saw stalkers in season one. There's stalkers everywhere.
Right.
Which are in between runners, the newly infected, and clickers, the clickers, obviously. So they've got some fungal growth coming out of their head and stuff.
Yeah.
But they're not, they still have some vision left, so they aren't relying on the echolocation.
Right.
So they're completely silent, and they're able to kind of hide behind things and stalk them.
Right.
So they kind of just jump out at you and you, like,
make
you shit yourself. So they're full of them,
mm-hmm.
and clickers and shit. And then when you turn the generator on, a massive big shambler chases you through the entire level, and you've got to, like, swipe the key card quickly to get out and do all this stuff, and it's, like, really, really intense. People are upset about that. And people are upset. In what would have been the last episode before the giraffes, they go through a tunnel.
Right.
And it's in full of infected, tons of shamblers, tons of clickers, like, the whole way. Right. And it's just kind of, as a set piece, really, really cool. But from what I've seen, and I'm very immersed in the online stuff, they're the kind of, they're really the two things that people missed. And they're both, again, gameplay moments. They're not narrative moments.
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, the first one, it sounds like it was just, would just be an interesting scene to have. I don't, probably they just cut it for time, I would be imagining. But the second one, before the giraffes, like, immediately my thought was, well, like, that kind of makes sense that they would cut that from the final episode, because the final episode, they want to really lead up to that brutality of Joel in the hospital and really focus on that. Because it's really, it's the only moment of violence really in the whole show, in the whole episode, sorry. Yeah. So it makes sense that they'd be like, no, we're putting a spotlight on this. Nothing else is happening except for that. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. And as you say, like, well, as you said, that they said it makes sense to not have much violence in it so that it's still very intense. So it makes sense that they would get rid of them. But I also understand why people would be like, well, if this is the first moment that you really get really overwhelmed, or it's a particularly memorable moment in the game.
Yeah. I don't miss it. It's in the game, the only narrative moment in it is that Joel escapes the basement and he gets attacked by a, basically.
Right.
He gets attacked by an alive human, and he's, like, getting choked to death, and Ellie shoots him, and that's the first that we see. We obviously know that she had to kill Riley.
Yeah.
But it's the first time she kills someone that we see.
But they kind of replaced that, or did that anyway.
Well, they didn't. She might not have, in there, I can't even remember that scene in the game. I don't know if she killed him or she just shot him, but either way.
Yeah.
They did replace it, yes, with the scene in,
Kansas.
Yeah.
So they didn't really cut the narrative point of it.
No, not even. Really? The other... Oh, structurally, the only things I would have changed is for the Left Behind episode, the Ellie and Riley flashback episode, and the David pedophile culty winter section. I probably would have structured them more in the vein of episodes 5 and 6 in Kansas, in that I would have interspersed the flashbacks throughout the two episodes. Right. Or not even the two episodes, just... I think they should have cut back to present day. Because in the game, you don't actually... You think Joel's dead.
Right.
So it... In the game, he falls on Reba. He falls on...
Yeah, that's right. I saw someone say that. Yeah, it was
bad. And then it cuts to black. Right. After they escape the raiders that they kill. Or the cult people that they kill. It cuts to black, and then for the first time in the game, you're playing as Ellie, and she's alone, and she's hunting for the rabbit or whatever. And she comes across David, and it's not until he says, "What do you need? Food, clothes, medicine?" And she jumps at medicine. That's when you find out Joel's alive still,
right?
And I think they probably could have played with the suspense of that a bit longer. Even knowing, everyone knows he's not dead, but, like, I think it still would have been effective when you're immersed in the episode kind of thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't feel that way, but I also didn't play the games, so I can understand why you would feel that way. My biggest actual structural problem with the show, funnily enough, was actually the Bill and Frank episode, because it was so disconnected from the wider narrative. But I loved the episode so much and thought it was so beautifully written that I still wouldn't change it. Like,
I've seen people say they wanted it later in the season.
I don't know about...
And they would have... Or even switched...
Yeah.
The Ellie and...
Yeah.
The two standalone-ish... They're not bottle episodes, but standalone-ish episodes. I don't know if I agree with that purely because I do think it sets up the stakes of... I've said it like 20 times this episode, but the emotional stakes, like...
No, well, this is what I'm saying,
it's world-building and context and all of that. And I think we do need that pretty early in the narrative.
I definitely agree. And again, I do think that it was very important and I wouldn't change it. Because I genuinely think that that story in that episode is one of the most beautiful episodes of TV.
Yeah.
I wouldn't change it, but I do think that it's so disconnected from the rest of everything that's going on. And if you had, if you did remove that whole thing, it would make absolutely no difference to the wider story, you know? So because Ellie doesn't meet Bill and Frank by the time Joel and Ellie get there, they're dead. Like, even if they'd been alive or dead, it wouldn't have changed anything because they still would have gotten what they needed and gone on.
Yeah, I don't think there was really any winning with that particular issue, because if they had of... So say they made it so that, you know how they say, I want one last day, one good last day. And then if they had of had Ellie and Joel rock up like the day before that, and we don't see Frank. Frank's in the bed sick, ridden, you know, ill. And it was just Bill, and Bill's grumpy and for that reason. And then Ellie and Joel leave, and then we have the next day is the last day, the last good day, whatever. Even if they did do something like that where it was more...
connected to the wider
story. And we had Ellie and Frank interact and stuff, Ellie and Bill interact and stuff, I think it would satisfy that, but I don't... I think it would ruin...
The emotional stuff.
The emotional... Yeah, the tension, the...
The beat, yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. No, for sure, for sure. So I don't know if
there is winning in that...
Yeah.
Respect. I actually think that the Ellie's Left Behind episode was a bit more jarringly
interesting,
disconnected, not obviously not narrative, not disconnected. It gives very, very vital context to Ellie as a person and stuff. It's literally the main character's backstory.
I think that is probably why, and I also think because that episode was sandwiched with present scenes,
that's the thing,
I think is why it felt like it much more naturally fit, but that doesn't mean it's necessarily true.
See, I think it naturally fit.
Yeah.
But I don't think it was... I think it was... We went from Joel potentially dying...
Yeah.
...to immediately finding out he's alive and just passed out.
Yeah.
And then an entire episode of flashback.
No, for sure. It was a weird...
I think it kind of interrupted it in a weird way. I think it was necessary, and I think I really loved the episode, and I think it was a good episode. I guess... And honestly, potentially, they could have done it with more with Bill and Frank, too. Perhaps just played with...
In a slightly
with,
different spot.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Played with kind of the structure a little bit to... make it flow...
Well, they did it,
but not interrupt it as much. Does that make sense?
They did it in a really, really specific way in the whole season, which is when they did a flashback, they committed to the whole fucking thing. They did,
which I did like, because full... it obviously...
Yeah, so, but I mean, like, there's obviously multiple ways that you can do flashbacks, but they picked one and they stuck with it the whole season. So I think by the time you get to Ellie's backstory... You're kind of used to it. You're like, oh, okay, I know I'm going back in time and I know we're fucking doing that for the whole episode, you know? But I do agree with what you mean. Like, I definitely, at the end of that episode, I was like, but wait, I didn't see anything about Joel.
Well, it didn't move the story forward
at all.
At a point in the story where it's moving quickly.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's what I was trying to say, and I didn't say it well.
Yeah.
But that's what I mean. It's like, yeah, you put it well, that it, it was like they cut it in the middle of an action scene and put this episode-long flashback.
Yeah, yeah. Which
perhaps
was...
even if they, instead of the beginning of the episode showing Ellie and Joel in present day, I think if they had started the episode with the flashback...
Yes, and just gone to that, and then at the end...
A cold open with the flashback.
Yeah.
Credits. Then we see that Joel's alive and stuff, and then we get the rest of the Ellie and stuff at the mall.
Yeah.
So, like, we could have easily had... The cold open be Ellie and Riley, all of the stuff that happened in the episode, up to the point where Ellie and Riley, Ellie agrees to sneak out with Riley.
Yeah.
Credits, present day, we find out Joel's alive and stuff.
Yeah.
Ellie goes off to hunt, flashback to the...
Yeah. I mean, they could have done that, and I think it would have made more sense, but again, obviously, they,
well, this,
they picked
I'm
a way to do flashbacks.
I'm saying this because of what you said,
it.
And I agree with what you said, that they chose that flashback method, that kind of narrative device, and stuck with it. Do you think that if they had have done it in two separate ways, one, Bill and Frank being the entire episode uninterrupted, and then the second flashback episode being kind of a bit more structurally non-linear, do you think that having two different types of flashback episode would have... maybe made it feel a bit more?
I mean, no, I don't think so, because I think the reason why I felt so okay with all of the different flashbacks was because retrospectively I was like, oh, well, they did it all in the same way. I know what to expect from these flashbacks. Okay. But as every single time as I was watching them, I was like, I don't care about this. Take me back to the present time. I want a present time. This is so weird. I don't understand why this is going in here. This doesn't make any sense. And then afterwards, I was like, oh, okay, I guess I understand why it went in there. And it did make sense. Interesting. And
I'm opposite. Oh, I was, interesting. As I was watching it, I was engrossed and I was emotional and I cry. And
yeah.
I was super not thinking of anything else. But then when it ended, I was like, that was fucking phenomenal.
Yeah.
Maybe yep. they could have given us a bit more present day story. I don't know.
Well, honestly, like,
only real complaint about the show.
I feel like we could probably argue it as well till the cows come home. I think it's such a subjective thing. And again, they made a creative decision and they stuck with it. And I think overall that made the whole first season make like sense.
Yeah.
Structural sense. I think if they'd done it multiple different ways, it would have been a bit like, oh, why did they just do one whole episode with Bill and Frank? Just that one time. You know.
Well, I also think that we went straight from the Ellie left behind flashback episode to Ellie being alone with David for the whole episode and them not being reunited yeah. until the very end.
That's...
So it was basically two episodes back of to us back not of... having Ellie and Joel together.
Yeah.
Do you think maybe if they did if they added an extra episode to the season?
Honestly, I'm not really sure, because I think the thing that makes those two episodes feel different from the rest is that it's really, really clear that we're not focused on Joel for the first time in the series.
Yeah, true. Okay, yeah.
Which is obviously what happens in the game.
Yeah.
Right? And it does make sense because Joel is bedridden. But up until that point, you think that Joel is the main character, and then suddenly we're focusing on Ellie and Ellie's full backstory and what Ellie's doing in the camp. And it's really good, don't get me wrong, but it does make you go a bit like, oh, wait a second, what's going on here? Yeah.
Again, we're only talking about this specific thing because it's, like, the only real complaint.
Oh, absolutely.
It's not even a complaint. It's the only real, we're like, just,
Well, it's not a complaint because there are multiple ways to do it, but that doesn't mean that one is righter than the other. There's just different ways to do it.
And also, it doesn't fucking matter because...
they're still extremely satisfying.
And episode 3, for me, is one of the best episodes of television of all time.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anyway, all right, let's wrap it up.
Okay.
9 out of 10.
For me, 9 out of 10.
9 out of 10. Same.
I wouldn't really... Even if they were like, time travel and change one thing about the show.
No.
I don't know that I would.
I would either. I don't think I could do it any better than they did it.
Exactly. And I think even how it all unfolded with episode 1 and 2 being mushed together and being an hour and a half long, I think that ended up working well and in their favor. It gave us, as the audience, more time.
Yeah.
To connect in the pilot than...
Well,
I don't think I've ever seen a pilot that's...
Well, I think you're absolutely correct, because it meant that we spent a lot of time at the beginning in, like, the 2003 with Sarah and with Joel. Mm. And it also meant that when they did that fast forward to 20 years, you were kind of like, oh, okay, I understand why they've done this. We've started with that so that we can understand what happened, what's happened to Joel. But I think if that had been its own episode and then we'd gone 20 years in the future in a second episode, I would have been like, what?
Oh, no, not having Ellie until episode 2 would have made zero sense.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I mean, not even just about Ellie.
No, that's what it was. At the end of episode 1, originally, the viewer met Ellie. Joel and Ellie didn't even meet in episode 1.
Interesting.
It was episode 2 where...
Well, I mean, it's not even necessarily about Joel and Ellie meeting. It's actually just about the 20 years difference. I would have been like, oh, the show's actually set 20 years past this?
Right, right. They would have had to make the Sarah flashback, the Sarah 2003 stuff, 5 minutes instead of 20.
Yeah, yeah.
For it to make
sense. If that's what they would... Yeah, right. Yeah.
And also, I'm kind of even rethinking things as I do I'm talking, because I'm like, well, technically 20 minutes, there was like a 20-25 minute flashback of the 2003 Sarah stuff.
Mm. It was really
in the first
long.
Episode.
Yeah.
And then but there was two more like flashback episodes. So
it
I'm
didn't
like,
feel like a flashback when we did it. It felt like the beginning of the story.
Yeah, but it's like, looking back retroactively, that's an entire chunk of
Half an hour of
the episode where it's not focused on Joel or Ellie. It's just about a character, and it's giving context, and it's giving world building, and it's giving emotional themes and thematic relevance and stuff. Like,
Anyway, we're gonna wrap up. So
What I'm trying to say is, even looking back at it and kind of reevaluating episode one, I think that episode one then gives the whole season kind of a
For sure, they set it up really well.
I don't think that the flashback episodes are so out of place when I'm thinking about episode one now. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Yeah, because three's a pattern. Two is a coincidence, but three's a pattern. So,
yeah.
Okay, good one.
Hi, it's Future Maddie and Nick.
Woo!
We are just hopping again. We are just hopping on to say goodbye.
Yay! Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening, and please follow us on Instagram and TikTok at WTFIH Podcast. Woo! All the links are down below as usual.
Yay.
Also, we just saw Scream 6, and it was really good.
Yeah, it was actually, it was enjoyable. If you like the other films, you're going to like this one.
Yeah.
But if you don't like the other films, then...
Well, I don't know why you would be five movies deep.
It's really true. Like yeah, that's very accurate.
But that is all.
Yay. Thank you.
That's just a good bite, but popcorn breath.
God. Thank you very much for listening to What the Fuck Is Happening, the podcast. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.